Let's take our Bibles and turn to Genesis chapter 7 this morning. Genesis chapter 7. This morning's message is entitled Grace on the Inside. And the news from yesterday, last night, Melina and I were getting ready for bed when someone sent me word that there were bombs that had dropped in Iran. We heard the president was going to address the nation. And I think someone in the text message said, "And here we go." Meaning that we are right here upon the precipice of who knows what. I heard the news commentators talking about, well, the next 48 hours will tell us where we're headed and what's up. And I tell you, 48 hours, that's a long time to sit and wait to hear, to figure out what's going on. I look at Genesis chapter 7. This morning we're going to be looking at Noah getting into the ark and about grace on the inside and what that looks like. As it was, the bombs that fell could lead to World War III. It may lead to peace. I really don't know, because these are uncertain times that we live in. And yet I know who's on the throne and knows exactly what's in store and who knows exactly what's ahead. And it's to him this morning that I want to unite my heart and my thoughts as I gather around his word. Our big idea this morning is this: from every angle, the sight of grace overwhelms. Would you join me in prayer as we ask the Lord to bless our time together? Lord, we come to you this morning and we thank you so much for your grace and for your goodness. We thank you so much for your presence and your peace. And Lord, there are some that are with us by way of broadcast today that aren't able to be with us. And I pray, Father, that your grace upon them. Lord, I pray for Miss Sylvia this morning. And our hearts are heavy at the directions that her story has turned. But we know, Lord, that she has said all along that her life is in your hands. And she is living in your time and on your timetable. And I just pray, Father, for your grace on her and the family this morning as well. Lord, give us some help and some comfort. Comfort our hearts with your grace as only you can. We ask these things in your name. Amen. I want to talk to you about the days of Noah. Last weekend, Melina and I were in Texas. We were in a part of Texas that we don't normally get to travel to when we're with my family. It's just 2 hours away from where my family lives. At one point, my family lived in this area, and it's where Melina and I courted, and there was a very special place in Glen Rose, Texas, called Dinosaur Track State Park. It is a riverbed where there are an amazing concentration of actual dinosaur tracks that you can see in the river. So Melina and I got up early last Saturday morning and drove out to the park. We made reservations early so that we could get out there to see the tracks. And do you know what we found when we got to the river? It was flooded and we couldn't see the dinosaur tracks. How ironic that the flood is the reason why we couldn't see the dinosaurs. And for those of you who are curious as to whether or not there were dinosaurs on the ark, the last time we were together, we talked about that. The dinosaur tracks that were visible that we could see were really amazing. There were some samples that were, I guess, some impressions, molds that were taken from some of the dinosaur tracks. We did get to see some, but we didn't get to actually see them in the riverbed. Nonetheless, to be out there in Texas to see and to know that there was some evidence that goes back to a passage that we are looking at and talking about. It was about, harkens back to a life about the world in the days after the flood. It would have to be after the flood. What was life like before the flood? We don't question the reality of the flood. We stopped over at the Creation Evidences Museum and sat through part of the presentation over there. And the Genesis account of God's creation and how it works in with Noah's flood. It was pivotal in understanding God's work in creation, God's work in judgment. This morning in Genesis chapter 7, we will see what life is like on the ark. But before we get there, I want to go to the New Testament to look at what Jesus says about the days of Noah. And it is to Jesus speaking to his disciples, to those who will witness the moment before Jesus returns. I'm reading in Matthew chapter 24, verses 36 through 42. "But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Then shall two be in the field, the one be taken and the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the other shall be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. Matthew chapter 24 is a very, very insightful passage that Jesus gives us some warnings and links his coming to the off-guard unpreparedness, the lack of attention that people took in the days of Noah. Jesus says this is how it's going to be shortly before he comes. I know sometimes we read our Bibles and we try to figure out, are we talking about the rapture here? Is this what he's talking about, how he comes before the rapture? Maybe he's talking about a judgment day, what it's going to be like in the end times. I see the passage speaking specifically, though, about the second coming of Jesus. And for those who are alive before his coming, I'm not discounting the rapture, but I don't see that this is a passage that's really speaking of the rapture. And I'll give you the reason why that is. It is the two that we see, the two examples we see of those who one was taken and one was left. It is describing the moments preceding the Lord's return. The ones who are going to witness that awesome day that he comes. Just like his return, which is certain, which is promised, which is guaranteed, people aren't ready. And I find that when we look back at the pattern of history, history does repeat itself. People do not get ready, or at least try not to get ready, until it's absolutely too late. I don't know if you heard the story about Melina and I making our way to Texas. I don't want to get into trouble or cause any more plaque in my wife's heart, but it was, we found out the hard way about the changes at the airport check-in procedures with the TSA. Melina had moved some of her billfold from one pocketbook to another and somehow left her new ID at home. We go to the airport. She realizes that while we're en route, we don't think we're going to make it to the airport because I had got off work at the camp really late. We had about 45 minutes before the plane was supposed to depart while we were still on our way to the airport. I know that we're not going to make our flight if everything doesn't work out. She discovers when we're about Hillsboro that she didn't have her ID, so we call her parents into the rescue to try to find her ID and get it for her. So we go to the airport. I said, let's just go through because I know that some people have been able to get through. And you know what I found at the airport? At the TSA checkpoint, I had my ID, so I just went right on through. And there was somebody ahead of me that didn't have the proper credentials. They just ushered him through and asked him some extra questions. Melina happened to have an out-of-date ID in her wallet, out-of-date, out of the window for about, it was 2 years old. I think they would allow you to use an ID that potentially was 1 year old, out-of-date. She shows them a two-year-old ID. And it looked like she was not going to get through that gate. I don't understand how the person who did not have the credentials gets walked on through. My wife, who's with me, who does not look like a terrorist, shows some ID. It wasn't valid. And so they tell her that they're not going to get her on that flight. She happens, by the grace of God, her parents arrive. And I won't talk about the laws that were broken for them to get there. But we broke no laws inside the airport. She gets the ID, and just as the last person is getting on the plane, Melina makes her way back to the gate, and we board together, and then the door to the plane is shut. And I thought to myself, what an amazing start to our journey. And then we sat on the plane for about 45 minutes because we couldn't take off from a delay. And then coming back, we were stuck in Dallas because of all the rains that were moving through the area. We could not take off in time. We got to Texas about 2 a.m., I think, Friday morning, and on our way back, we got back home, I think around 4 o'clock, 4:15, and I got up about 6:30 to get back out of the camp, so I didn't have very much sleep. I'm already in a sleep deficit, so if I don't make much sense, just give me a little bit of grace. It is that what it means to be not ready, that's what life in Noah's day is, the reference is all about. People who aren't prepared, who aren't ready. Now, do not read into my illustration about my wife not being prepared. There is a bigger connection to the door on the plane being closed versus the preparation issue. We made it. That's what counts. But in Jesus' words, there were people that were not ready. And I want to ask you the question, is it better to be taken or is it better to be left behind? I remember several years ago, a very popular a series of books written about life after the rapture, with the second coming, the end times prophecies. It was entitled Left Behind. And it was what a roller coaster ride of a book. But as you read into the passage of Scripture, there are two people that are in play. One is taken and one is left. And what does that mean that one is taken and one is left behind? One of them is taken in judgment and the other one is left by grace. What's the difference? Why is it that one is taken and one is left behind? When you look at what God tells to Noah and how God prepared Noah, how he prepared the ark. For 120 years, Noah preaches that the rains are coming to get inside the ark, that God had provided a refuge, and it would only be Noah and his family that would follow. It would only be Noah, his family, and the animals that would be spared inside the ark. And I tell you, it had to have been discouraging for Noah to build that ark for all those years, to be mocked, derided, scorned. But when the rains start to fall, I wonder where those cries, where those mockings were. The point and the reality of the days of Noah and the days of Jesus' second coming, no one knows the day. There is no one that could possibly know the day save the Father himself. The angels don't know. You and I don't know. And I know that right now we live with people who love to set dates and try to figure out, and especially as conflicts rise in the Middle East, it gets us excited, gets us motivated. And I want to say that, yes, as the fig leaves start, as you look at a fig leaf on a tree in early summer, and you can tell that summer is upon you, is what Jesus talks about in Matthew 24. We are living in the days shortly before his return. I do believe it, but I don't have a day to tell you that it is coming. I just tell you with certainty that Jesus said it. I believe it. It's going to take place. And it's why it's important to be ready for the day, to take the preparations, to be ready for the day, so that when that day comes, you realize, you see, you have safety and security. But the passage of the warning isn't just about no one knows the day and how important it is to be ready for the day, because those are two thoughts that we could set out there on the shelf and say, you know what, no one knows the day. I know that we need to be ready for the day. But the real warning and where it comes to the call is that you need to be ready today. But in days of Noah, there was no rush. People were living their lives. They were eating, they were drinking, they were marrying. They were just moving about like life would continue on indefinitely, like there would be nothing to worry about. There was no sense of urgency, but also we find that there was no faith in Noah's day. It's the grace that we find in the warning that the judgment is coming. And sometimes we don't even think about a warning as being a measure of grace. And yet, to hear, people get ready, Jesus is coming. To hear, the rains are about to come. Get ready. Come, come with us. Find refuge in the ark. Falls on deaf ears. I still see this today. People with no sense of urgency, no desire to be ready. And yet God has extended grace in this moment in the warning. As we look now in Genesis chapter 7 at the grace in the days of Noah. Look with me in verse 1, Genesis chapter 7. And the Lord said unto Noah, Come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. I think verse 1 is a good place to ask this question. Why was it that God spared Noah? Was that fair that God spared Noah? We know the story because we've heard it countless numbers of times. But a question that I ask and I encourage you to ask is, why was it that God spared Noah? We find in Ezekiel chapter 14, verse 14, though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job were in it, they should be delivered, but their own souls by their righteousness, saith the Lord God. Why was it that Noah escaped when everyone else experienced judgment? Well, the Lord looks at his righteousness. Was it Noah's righteousness that saved him? I know that our righteousness is as filthy rags, Isaiah tells us. And Noah's righteousness, was it because Noah was just a good person? Though there is something about Noah that the scriptures elaborate on in some detail, we don't know how different he was in his day. But we do know that he stood out because he hears the voice of the Lord. He follows the Lord's command obediently, and in his righteousness and in his faith, he begins to build the ark. It was the ark that saved Noah. It was that boat. I know that there are some church architectures that you can look at. If you've ever been into a church that has the wooden ceilings with the large wooden beams that are exposed on the inside, it was an architectural design in the late 60s, early 70s, that was to emphasize the refuge of the church sanctuary. It was supposed to look like the ark. And the ark that the Lord provides to Noah and that Noah builds is absolutely the reason why Noah and his family survived the storm, right? No. It was all of the Lord. The Lord told Noah to build the boat. The Lord provides Noah with instructions for the boat and how to fill it. It's all the grace of God at work and at play in the story of Noah. And the writer of Hebrews tells us in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7, by faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness, which is by faith. Faith makes the difference. But without God's grace, faith is meaningless. And God tells Noah what he's going to do, and Noah trusts God, follows God's directions, and God spares Noah's life and his family. It's the Lord that saves Noah. But we want to ask this question, where is it that our faith goes in the times of crisis or turmoil? My strength? My ability? I find that's a human nature condition that you and I struggle with. Oh, I can get myself through this. I realize the resolve of older generations who went through the Great Depression and knew what it was like to suffer or at least get by with absolutely nothing. How resourceful and how much better prepared for life today I think older generations are than younger generations. When Melina and I were watching the news last night, she says, we've got to go get gas, and we've got to go to Costco to start stocking up on green beans. If this war starts out, we want to make sure we have gas in our tank and green beans in our pantry, in our bedroom. And I thought to myself, oh, there's so much work to do. Why did they have to drop the bombs now? As I heard that news last night. And I think to myself, you know, the amount of preparation that we do is important. And I'm not saying do not prepare, do not have extra on hand. But do you know that if the Lord should tarry his coming and life gets difficult, there's going to be a lot of people. Just imagine how long the lines are going to be at McDonald's when we have a worldwide famine crisis, right? people won't know what to do or how to get by. We lean upon our own strength. We try to get by on our own strength, but that's not the answer. And the ark itself, God's instrument of grace for Noah and his family, to trust in the ark. And imagine for Noah what it must be like to get into this boat that's going to float. It's going to have all of the animals, and everything's going to have to last over the duration of God's judgment. And I will tell you that after the course of the rain this past week, we found leaks in buildings out at Deer Lake. We've got leaks around the property here at the church. It's amazing that everything looks normal until the rains come, and then you start to realize, okay, we got to buckle down here. We got to fix this. We got to repair that. And I will tell you, I'm grateful for everything that the Lord has blessed us with here at the church. But my security isn't built upon brick and mortar. It's built upon the Lord. Don't trust in yourself. Don't trust in the ark. Be inside the ark. But lean wholly upon the Lord. So we look now at grace extended in Genesis chapter 7, verse 2. Of every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens, the male and his female, and of the beasts that are not clean by two, the male and his female. Of fowls also of the air by sevens, the male and the female, to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. The seven and two, I have heard this taught. Why was it that the unclean were two and the clean were seven? And I remember that Moses is the one who writes the first five books of the Bible, that it was the law that God gives to Moses that it describes the ceremonially unclean animals. I get that. I understand that. But in the book of Genesis, when we read of Noah, this is before that distinction was made in giving of the law. Why in the world would there have been seven of the clean animals and only two of the unclean animals? And if so, I mean, why couldn't God just take care of all those unclean animals? That would have been the time to do it, right? We talked about the snakes. We talked about the mosquitoes, the beavers, or the badgers. We talked about the groundhogs. We talked about the squirrels last time we were together. God could have fixed all of that for us. It was a time, yes, before the law. But that the animals that were clean, that there would be seven of their kind, seven in quantities, the male and the female. You have to have both of those to make sure that the seed survives. I see here in the clean animals, there being more of those. This would be God's future provision for Israel. I can say that. I can argue that what God is providing and what God is preparing for his people down the road, he is making sure that there are going to be, yes, the animals that would be used in sacrifices. Yes, the animals that would be ceremonially what God's set apart people should be eating. And God, in his grace, provides for the entire animal kingdom. Now, I think as we look at the ark, think about all of those animals inside the ark. I think even a clean animal is still going to leave a mess. And how do I know? I know that people are cleaner than animals. Some people are. But the baby kind of a people it leaves a really big mess, right? Imagine what it must have been like inside the ark with all of these creatures. The Lord provided enough supplies. The Lord provides the animals for the future. The Lord provides protection even for the animal kingdom. And Noah and his family on the boat inside the ark are there with a job to do. And there's going to be more grace that comes. And I say this, that's my takeaway from the seven and the two, that God would be providing more grace in the future. It would not be the blood of goats or bulls or even the innocent little lamb that would be sacrificed on the Day of Atonement that would bring healing, satisfaction, and ultimate forgiveness. That would be the blood of God's perfect lamb, Jesus. And the provision that God makes on the ark for Noah and his family, and for the animals, stands as a welcome reminder to you and to me that God had something more in store with this earth other than just wiping it out, letting it go by the wayside. He prepares grace for Noah, and you and I on this side of the flood are reaping the benefits of God's provision to Noah because we are alive and we are here. We look at verse 4, "For yet 7 days, and I will cause it to rain upon the earth, 40 days and 40 nights. And every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth, with the exception of those inside the ark. And Noah did according unto all that the Lord commanded him. And Noah was 600 years old when the flood waters was upon the earth." Imagine the Lord using you in this capacity at 600 years old. I got out of the church van on Thursday afternoon, and Jack Vaughn says, "What's wrong with you? You get out of that van like an old man." And I will tell you that in my few years, this body breaks down. I think what we see in the story of Noah is not the amazing resolve of Noah, though Noah responds in faith, yes, and he's recognized by the writer of Hebrews. It's about the grace that God provides that I want you to focus on this morning. Because we find in verse 7, "And Noah went in, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him, into the ark because of the waters of the flood." They go into the ark early. And they're not just alone. Of the clean beasts and of the beasts that are not clean and of the fowls and of everything that creepeth upon the earth, the fish wouldn't be inside the ark because they're in the waters. There went in two and two unto Noah into the ark, the male and the female, as God hath commanded Noah. And I'm grateful for God's provision that he provides for a way forward in the future. The perfect formula for what it takes to start over. Yeah, animals. Yeah, Noah and his family. Yeah, the male and the female of the species. But it's God's grace. It's God's grace on the right side of the storm. It's the preparation that took place before the storm came that makes the difference. And we see God's blessing and his provision. The time to prepare is before the storm, not during, not after the storm. Because we find in verse 10, "And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth." For 7 days, Noah and his family lived inside that box without the rains coming. I could speculate what it must have been like outside for everyone who's thinking, what is up with Noah and his family? He's taken all these animals into this ark. People were going about their business. I know that from the words of Jesus, they were eating, they were drinking, they were continuing on life as usual. But I want to point out that God closes the door before he sends his final judgment. Look down at Genesis chapter 7, verse 16. "And they went in male and female of all flesh, as God had commanded him, and the Lord shut him in." Do not think that the story of Noah, that the account of Noah has anything to do with Noah's worthiness, but everything about God's graciousness. Oh yes, God uses Noah. I get that. But the exaltation in Genesis chapter 7 is of the judge. And it's the grace that Noah and his family experienced by the judge that you and I see as an example of what, and not just an example, but the precursor to the grace that God has for you and for me. Verse 17, "And the flood was 40 days upon the earth, and the waters increased and bare up the ark, and it was lift up above the earth. And there were waters prevailed and were increased greatly upon the earth, and the ark went up upon the face of the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heavens were covered. 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered. And all flesh died that moved upon the earth, both the fowl and of the cattle and of the beasts and of every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, and every man, all in whose nostrils was the breath of life, of all that was in the dry land died, and every living substance was destroyed which was upon the face of the ground, both man and cattle and the creeping things, and the fowl of the heaven, and they were destroyed from the earth. And Noah only remained alive, and they that were with him in the ark. And the waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days. What arrogance for those who didn't prepare. The rain started to come. What's this? Oh, all right, well, we'll just take refuge inside of our houses. As the flood water started to come up, well, let's just find higher ground. There was so much water that rises, it was 15 cubits above the tallest mountain. 150 days. After 40 days and 40 nights of rain, there would not be anyone or anything that was stable, strong enough to tread water, to try to ride out God's judgment, except for Noah and his family, who found grace on the inside. We see inside the ark for Noah and his family. Just another reminder, God keeps his word. I stand up here today to tell you that God keeps his word. When God makes a promise, he keeps his promises. And you and I are a little bit different. No, you and I are altogether different. We can't guarantee our word. We cannot guarantee, because we do not know tomorrow from today. You and I can try to prepare, we can try to get ready. I don't understand how it works. I have one of my siblings who works out, runs 14 miles a day, very, very healthy, very, very fit, and she's got some health issues. Minor, but they're health issues. And I try to make sure I get to McDonald's 14 times a day. And I will eat French fries, I think. At least that's what my blood work showed this week for my annual physical. And I think to myself, Lord, how is it that I enjoy myself more than she enjoys herself? She eats kale and cauliflower and all these things that were drowned in the flood. And I eat the things that were safe on the ark, right? The hamburgers and the hot dogs. No, not those. But as I think about it, why is it that we both have the same outcome? And I tell you, for each and every one of us, not a one of us are strong enough. Not a one of us are worthy enough. Not a one of us are going to make it to 600 years. But every one of us who trusts in Jesus lives forever. And the promise that he makes, and he keeps his word. When Jesus makes a promise, he keeps his promise. And even in the Genesis account, when we look at the story of Noah, in the days of Noah, when we look at life inside the ark, we see the reminder, the assurance that God keeps his word. So I'd like to take a few moments to talk about the grace perspective, what it looks like. There's no life apart from God. And yet, how many think that that's where happiness is found? Oh, but they don't know. I know, but it breaks my heart about someone who does know and goes by the wayside. Someone who falls away or falls into sin. Over the last several weeks, as I've been working through this series, to read and or to hear about people that I know, that pastors that stumbled and fell in sin, in error, breaks my heart. How is it that someone could fall from grace, to fall into sin? And I will tell you that there is no life apart from God. In the days of Noah, everyone wasn't concerned about the judgment. No one was concerned about what was coming. It was just enjoying myself right here and right now. But unless big change comes, there is no hope. There is no escape. Grace on the inside. We find it was Noah's righteousness that the Lord gives him, recognizes for him, uses him as his messenger, as the man who builds the ark. There clearly is a relationship that Noah has with God apart from the other people that were alive in that day. Noah was a godly father. His family are with him on the ark. And I will say that the righteousness that Noah had was because of the grace of God. When you remember the generations, as we looked back several weeks ago, we were looking at the genealogies of how many people would be able to hearken back to remember what Adam, who knew Adam, that Adam walked with God and to hear the stories of how God talked with Adam in the garden at one time. We find that the relationship that Noah has with God is, well, God is going to use and have big plans for Noah to build that ark. That God used someone and God calls someone to be the one who builds the ark. It's we call it Noah's ark, but it's God's ark that God provides safety and refuge for Noah, because it's all about the Lord. And that's where grace has to go back to. Grace flows down. It never flows back up. It wasn't that Noah was so righteous that God said, oh, I don't have a choice. I've got to save you. I'm going to use you because, well, you're just so good. Noah was a broken individual, finds grace, and God uses him to build the ark. And what I want to say is that grace, and what I'm trying to say this morning, is that grace is what makes the difference. You see grace in the storm. You see grace in the preparation for the storm. And you will see grace during and after the storm as we continue on in Noah's account next week. Imagine what life was like before the flood and how different life was going to be like after the flood. If you're planning on taking a road trip this summer with your family and you're stuck inside that car, that are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there? I wonder if there was an equivalent for Noah and his family in their day. Noah would have no idea where they're headed. All they would know is that there was so much water on the earth and that the boat was floating and that life was going to be altogether different after the flood. It would be starting over. The ark would be unloaded, and Noah and his family, who were having to trust God the entire time, to imagine to witness that much water, circumstance that you could never, ever fathom, that you never, ever could understand the depths of until you experienced the depths of the storm. The life outside the ark contrasted to the life inside the ark. There was no life outside the ark. All of the hope and all of the safety was inside the ark that the Lord had planned, prepared, and that the call was to be ready for Noah and his family who were ready, and the difference that it made. The ones who were not ready were taken in judgment. And I want to say that there is grace in this moment that we're in. That Jesus warns what the life before his return looks like, how it's very similar to the events circular to the days of Noah. It is Jesus warning his disciples there in Matthew 24. So he tells them about what to expect when he comes. And they're not going to be around. We're on this side of church history as we're now 2,000 years after the cross. And the ones who will witness, I'm going to be a part of the rapture. I don't question where I'll be. But the ones who are here to witness God's judgment, I'm just so grateful that whenever the gospel was shared with me, the Lord convicted me and I came to faith in him, and that I will escape the judgment. Not because my preparation was on the right side. Yes, it was on the right side, but it's all of his grace. It's not anything that I add, but everything that he does. And the grace that we find in this moment, we find in Matthew chapter 24, but as the days of Noah were, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. And when Jesus speaks these words in Matthew chapter 24, there is grace that applies today. He's telling what will happen. And I want to remind you, Jesus keeps his word. And when Jesus makes his promise, he keeps his promise. That's why we close this morning with the Psalm 150, verse 5, let everything that hath breath praise the Lord. Praise ye the Lord. It's a reminder, it's a call, it's an appeal to live for Jesus today. I'm grateful that I'm on the inside, not on the outside. I'm grateful for grace. May this give us comfort today. From every angle, the sight of grace overwhelms. To be the recipient of grace that flows down from God, how awesome it is that to know that he saved you and he's delivered you from the judgment at hand. There is a judgment day that's coming where people will experience judgment, and that will be a dread day. And that's why, like Noah, you and I have a responsibility, an opportunity to be God's messengers, God's representatives, to share the message that grace is overwhelming, but it's greater than sin. May God provide you grace in your need today. May God give you the strength this week, not knowing where the storm goes, not knowing if the storm comes this week, not even knowing what the next 48 hours holds. I want to be on the right side. I invite you to look to God for your grace in the days ahead. Trust Him. Lean upon Him. Spend time talking to Him, not just for your benefit, but to share His grace, what He has done in your life from your need and how He's met your need. We have a long list of people on our prayer list inside the church. We know many more people outside of our church that God can use us to be agents of grace, much like Noah. Simply sharing the word, get on the ark, trust in Jesus today. May this be our prayer. Lord, thank you for your grace yesterday, today, and tomorrow.